comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at
From
The Kevin
sea to
Smith
shining
Show.
Sea throughout the solar
well,
system
we are apparently
beyond. This
going
is
to
the
be
Kevin
hearing
Smith Show.
The intro again on the radio station. And look, we're glad you're here. Let me explain. We had a major computer outage this week, a major computer crash, and we're operating now. It was the main server here, so we're operating. It's gone. It's dead, and we're having to use a laptop to do what it was doing. And so a few things are messed up technologically, but we are getting through it. And as soon as I get back from Los Angeles, we'll get all of that fixed. We're here because you have a right to know, and we're here because you matter. Now, I mentioned going to Los Angeles. I'll be flying out in just a few hours to join all the folks out there at the Alchemy event, and I'm really looking forward to meeting you there. So be sure you just come right up to me, introduce yourself. I want to get your autograph, and I'm not joking. I really want to get your autograph. I want to get my picture taken with you because you are the celebrities that make this show happen. Just to give you an idea of how far out in the sticks I am, and I am out in the sticks, folks, it takes me almost as long to get from where I am to the airport as it will take for me to fly all the way across the country to Los Angeles. Now, that's what I call in the sticks. That's back there. Today, 11-11-11, a lot of people have been thinking, oh, my God, you know, that's a significant date, and bad things or powerful things or mysterious things will happen on that date. And the Great Pyramid got shut down. Yes, indeed, the Great Pyramid was closed today. And the reason the Great Pyramid was closed today is because there were stories and rumors of groups that would try to hold some kind of spiritual ceremonies at the site of the Great Pyramid at 11:11 a.m. today on November the 11th, 2011. The person in charge of the Great Pyramid said, no, that's not why we closed it down. We closed it down until Saturday morning for necessary maintenance. Okay. But here's what happened. A group applied for permission to hold a ceremony there. They were denied permission. Nevertheless, even though they were denied permission to do that, it didn't stop concerned Egyptians from starting internet campaigns to prevent the event from taking place. Sort of like when a rumor gets out that a Hooters is going to open up in Churchville, USA. And then there's all kinds of extra meetings, and the mayor gets fired, and the police chief swears allegiance to the Bible, and just on the rumor that a Hooters is coming. We will be back in just a moment with my guest, Anthony Sanchez. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Anthony F. Sanchez. Now, he is certainly not a secret in the UFO community, and certainly not to the Kevin Smith Show audience, to the Kevin Smith Show family of listeners. He's been my guest before. I believe that it was in September of 2010. I know it was in 2010. I think it was in September. He was my guest, and we were talking about what was at that time his new book called UFO Highway, and this amazing story about extraterrestrials, their involvement here on Earth, their involvement with the U.S., with government types, with military types, and information from a colonel. We're going to talk about all of that a little bit tonight. Since that time, Anthony Sanchez has been hailed as a saint and damned as Satan, just depending on which group is dealing with him. He's highly controversial, and I have to tell you, I admire his willingness to keep plugging along. I admire his willingness to keep trying to get this story out and to explain some of the issues that some folks have brought up. And he's here to talk with us about all that tonight. But I have to tell you, folks, there's more than that. As you well know, many of you well know, Anthony has recently made yet another discovery, a pretty important one. Anthony Sanchez, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Anthony, was it September 2010 when you were here?
You know, actually, my records tell me that it was December 19th.
Okay.
December when
okay.
we spoke.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, you know, that's not bad for an old man's memory, you know. I got it in the right year.
Yep, you sure did.
Okay. Give us, because there are people that have not read the book or they have not heard you either on this show or some other show, so just give us UFO Highway in a nutshell. What is it about? What's the point of this book?
Well, there's three aspects to UFO Highway. The first is called the Dulce Interview, where I interviewed a retired United States Air Force colonel who claims he worked at the Dulce facility in northern New Mexico on the Hickory Apache Reservation. The second part of the book is Human Origins. I delve into human origins. I spent about 10 years working on what I call the lineal traditional linkage model, which shows connections between the various Near East regions, the cultures within the Near East region, And then finally, I have a section that delves a little bit into HARP and Blue Beam, but I didn't get to spend as much time finalizing that section as well as I would have liked to. But the biggest part of the book would have to be the Dulce interview. That's what's become so controversial. That's what everybody wants to know about. And that's why I was in Dulce just 2 weeks ago conducting an on-site investigation.
You know, we got something really strange happening here. And I don't know why. You and I tested Skype before we went on the air, did we not?
Yeah, we sure did.
Your audio is coming
through.
Yes, we
did.
Yeah, your audio is coming through loud and clear. I can hear it. And it's not going out over the TV broadcast for some reason. So what we're going to do is we're going to switch over to the telephone, and I will give you a call. This is really weird. Folks, this, honest to God now, 30 minutes before the show, we checked this, and it was working. 30 minutes before the show, it was working. And I can hear him. But, there we go.
Can you hear me okay?
Okay, I think we're probably going to be able to hear you now. If you will, just give me a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we'll take a look at it. Okay, Anthony. Yeah, you're way, way back there, but we can hear you. All right. 30 minutes before the show, we tested this, and I broadcast with Skype every night, right? Almost every night. It was working. For some reason, when we went on the air and started talking with Anthony, his audio was not coming through our TV broadcast. And it goes, what's weird about that, Anthony, is it goes there before it goes out on the radio. And it's going out on the radio. So, odd. All right, so you were giving us this thumbnail sketch of UFO Highway. So let's start that again. It's in three parts.
Hey, Kevin, you're breaking up really bad. I hate to do that, but I can barely hear anything you're saying.
All right. Well, let me tell you what we're going to do then. I'm going to call you on Skype. You will speak to us via the telephone, but you will hear me via Skype. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay. All right.
I can hear you now through Skype.
All right. So I'm going to... Yeah, well, Anthony, somebody's messing with you, man. We're getting echoes like crazy back through the telephone. Anyway, go ahead and cut your microphone off on Skype. And with your microphone off, you should be in good shape. And tell us about the purpose and the nature of your book. Yeah.
I'm having a lot of issues here, Kevin.
Yeah, we're hearing them.
Understanding myself and hearing you, it's like this crazy echo that I can't get rid of.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to tell you. Can you hear me on the telephone at all?
I can't hear your voice on the telephone, but I can hear you through Skype.
Yeah, but we're... No, we cannot use your audio through Skype. But we're getting all kinds of echo. Anthony, we can't continue with this.
Let me turn my Skype off and just go straight telephone.
All right.
Kevin, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well. But we're hearing echoes back. Yes, we can. Can you hear me?
Kevin, I can't hear you through the phone. Can you hear me through the phone?
Yeah. Okay, Anthony, I'll tell you what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to terminate the interview, man. Somebody's messing with you. Yeah, can you hear me? Okay. All right, folks. Well, what can I say? You heard it. Now, I'm telling you, folks, the other night when I spoke with Anthony on the telephone, he did get some strange digital sounds and interference on his telephone while we were talking. But I'm telling you, today I've spoken with him two, maybe three times, and we checked out the phone system and we checked out Skype, and everything was perfect. And now, for some reason, his audio, and this is strange, his audio was coming in via Skype. It was passing right through the television broadcast software and going straight over to the radio broadcast, which it's supposed to do, but it wasn't being picked up over on the TV side. It was passing through there, but it wasn't being picked up and broadcast by the TV side. But it was today, earlier, when we checked it. Now, that's odd, is it not? Well, Anthony is attempting to call again, so we'll see what we can come up with here. I don't know what the deal is. Hang on, Anthony. We'll see, but we really... I can't burn airtime trying to fix this.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'll send you an alternate phone number.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Here's what we'll do. All right. You go ahead and speak, and we'll try to pick up what you're saying off of the microphone. All right. Now, but this has to work. We've spent 21 minutes on this, and we can't spend more. Okay, we don't do on-air experiments. Okay, so here we go.
Absolutely.
Let's give it a try. What is UFO Highway about?
UFO Highway is about an interview that I conducted in 2010 with a retired United States Air Force colonel who was stationed out of McClellan Air Force Base. He claims that he worked at an underground facility in Dulce. Now, I'm inclined to believe him based on the vetting that I did and the information that I received, especially when I couple that information with the recent interviews I've conducted from people who live on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation and who have worked in law enforcement going back 30 years. I have received way too many cross-correlations of pieces of data that are critical that show the existence of a facility, not to mention the fact that I've made a discovery recently.
Okay, so the story basically... I don't know. I have no idea what's happening here. The story is that you had this conversation with a colonel, and that the colonel...
Yes.
Okay, and the colonel gave you information about UFOs, about extraterrestrials, and about a base out at Dulce, New Mexico, or near Dulce, that's underground.
In Dulce.
I'm sorry?
In Dulce.
In Dulce.
It's actually in Dulce, yes.
Okay. So this base is in Dulce, and is it underground?
Yes, it is underground.
Okay. So the base is underground in Dulce, and... what's going on with, I mean, what are the extraterrestrials up to out there?
So here's what's, this is what makes Dulce so interesting. We happened upon this facility in the late 1930s. And by the early 1940s, we were fully integrated into this environment where we had an engagement with these extraterrestrial, well, they're not extraterrestrials. That's the biggest misconception about all of this. These creatures that we found claimed to have been created here on Earth by this progenitor race that's also here on Earth. Today, this progenitor race exists as this alien-human hybrid group who looks like us, talks like us, walks like us, and they live among us. Now, what's interesting to note is that these greys, that's what we come to call them, greys, they're actually, you know, terrestrial.
I'm sorry, did you get that? Ahead.
Something happened with the audio. But anyhow, we are operating with these beings through a technology exchange program. But we're what they are receiving in exchange is resources, are resources from us, natural resources that they require to sustain themselves, to sustain their society. And there's lots of proof of this. Now, I was just there in Dulce, and I was interviewing former and current law enforcement professionals with respect to testimony that I received regarding the existence of the facility. One of the things that I walked away with, which was really surprising to me, was that many of these former law enforcement officers, some of them were from different generations, told of the same exact details, you know, with respect to some of the stories that they shared. Holographic entrances, teardrop-shaped craft that were illuminated with this fluorescent purple color, small beings that they've seen in and about the mesa. I also found out about another underground facility in Mount Archuleta, which was actually built by Kirtland Air Force Base in the mid 1960s to illegally store nuclear waste material. That facility has since been retrofitted by a company called Hyperion, who's using it to develop, 200 kilowatt micro nuclear reactors under the umbrella of the Technology Commercialization Office over at LANL. There's so much data that is just spilling out of Dulce, and it's lending credibility to the colonel's testimony that there is something that exists there.
Okay. I'll tell you something. This is so, so weird here. Man, you know, I'm not going to dwell on this, but I am going to comment just a little bit when we come back from this next break. Something weird is happening with the audio link between us. All right, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be back. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And ladies and gentlemen, my guest this evening is Anthony Sanchez. I said I was going to say something when we came back, and indeed I am, and here is what I'm going to say. It's been a very, very long time since we've had a night like this. I mean, this is not like flying a 747 without hydraulics. This is like flying a 747 without hydraulics in a hurricane. Things are going wacky on his end of the audio. Things are going wacky technologically here. Our TV broadcast was taken down. It's back up. And we got that worked around. I think, Anthony, again,
yep.
You and I tested this before the show, and it was perfect.
Flawless. It was flawless.
Now, how immediately when we go on the air, all of a sudden, the technology's working here except the link between me and you. That's odd. That's very, very odd. Nevertheless, it is real. Okay. In your book, I think it's been a distraction to keep us from getting into what we're going to get into here. But we are going to get into it. And come on, guys. I mean, if there's somebody doing this, you know, after 11 years and I'm still here, I won. You guys need to give it up. Okay. Now, Anthony, in your book, you, as documentation of the reality of this kernel, you provided a DD-214 for this kernel. And this DD-214
yes.
has, that's the discharge papers for this kernel. And it has basic military type information on it. However, this DD-214 has some kind of odd things on it that have been noticed not just by me, but by other people. I asked you about some of those things that night, and you answered. And I think at that point, some of those things you hadn't considered or thought about yet. The next night, I took the DD-214 and showed it on air and explained to the audience why I had difficulties with this DD-214. But other radio hosts have picked this up and have made pretty heated statements about you as a result of this DD-214. I want to give you the opportunity to tell the audience your side, no interruptions, your side of the DD-214. What's the story with that?
The story behind the DD-214 is that there's nothing special about how I obtained it. I filed a standard form 180 with the National Personnel Records Center, and I received a DD-214. All right, can you hear me, Kevin?
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting an echo. So, since the release of the DD-214, it was found that the discharge order seems to be an anomaly or an anachronism of sort, if you will, because the order did not come about until some 13 years after the date of the colonel's discharge. Now, I have a source who works at the NPRC, who I deal with regularly. She stated to me that reissued DD-214s, like the colonel's, are not outside of succumbing to human error at the hands of personnel responsible for them. Over 10 years as a business owner here in California, having requested discharge documents towards state of California and even federal contracts that I do as a software developer, I personally have seen many typos, handwritten entries, corrections, mistakes, smears, etc. So no, it's not evident of any type of attempt to conceal or confuse anyone. Anyone can go onto Google and query DD-214 to see thousands of examples of these, which contain errors, typos, handwritten entries, hand-typed entries, corrections, mistakes, smears. I mean, it's there for, all one has to do is look for it and you'll find it. So the kernel DD-214, in my mind, is very pristine, contains one small clerical anomaly, and it is 100% genuine. I'm compelled by the evidence to believe the events that the kernel talks about. I mean, I know that there are, you know, people that may have questions as to the validity of the colonel's, you know, service, but I don't.
Okay, so just to clarify, the colonel did not give you the DD-214. You applied for it and got it yourself.
Absolutely. Let me give you a little bit of background on that. And this is what everybody, you know, is most curious about. When I first came out with all of this information, I went on to two radio shows. These guys are probably friends of yours, Kevin. But you seem, okay, seems as you've been around so long.
Yeah, let's don't name names.
All right, so I went on to two radio shows within a week of one another. This is at the very beginning. I was very naive. I had never done radio ever. This was brand new for me. So you have to understand that. When I went on these shows, I told them exactly how I obtained the DD-214. I used my California Multiple Award Schedule. This is called a CMAS credential. I can use that as a business owner who has permission to do business with the state of California to expedite Standard Form 180 submittals to the NPRC. Why? Because I hire active reservists, active duty reservists. I hired former military personnel, and I win points towards bids on contracts for the government. Using the CMAS to expedite the Standard Form 180 under the premise that it was for a California bid was wrong, because it was not for business purposes. And I did it, and I got in trouble. Oh, well. You know, I wasn't thinking, and that's my problem. But the Department of General Services, they threatened to suspend my CMAS and put my company on probationary status. So when I went onto the air just a couple of weeks later to another show, I had been threatened to be fired from the company for doing what I did. The state of California was now involved. A CMAS analyst in the Department of General Services was listening to every single word. Someone had reported me. I can't name names, but by law, the Department of General Services had to tell me who reported me, and I can tell you, somebody who's leading the campaign against me is the individual that reported me. Anyway, on this next radio show, I was being monitored by my company, monitored by the DGS analyst, and I had to change the version of events as to who obtained the DD-214. So it went from me obtaining the DD-214 to the colonel. This is the only time I ever had to say that, but now it doesn't matter. Why? Because I got fired from the company. I no longer have anything to do with the company, nor do I have anything to do with the state of California, so I don't care. So if these people want to continue to take my words from that one event and twist them, they can. But anybody with the logical thought process, you know, within their mind can observe the data and see that that's all that it was. That's all that it was. The document was obtained filing a Standard Form 80 sent to the National Personnel Records Center and the Military Personnel Records Center in St. Louis, Missouri. They sent me a DD-214, the one that is plainly visible in the book UFO Highway. There's a certain individual out there who thinks that if he takes the document back to the government, that they're going to say, why, yes, sir, there is indeed a top-secret underground base in northern New Mexico where this colonel worked, and there are aliens, too. I mean, is this person serious? Do they truly believe that if they take this document back to the government, that the government is going to admit to the existence of an underground facility? So these people are taking two actions on my behalf, and they're twisting them to fool people, to prevent people from looking into the data that I have, you know, the body of evidence that I put together with respect to Dulcie.
Okay, remember, so basically what you're saying is that your own actions, we understand why you took those actions, you've explained that, but your own actions and words on the air with this radio station, that's what has brought down all of the heat from some of the radio hosts, right?
And believe it or not, the radio host, yes, but the person that's conducting this campaign, he didn't even care about any of that. Not until he found out that I was going to bring in a medium to analyze some of the artifacts that had been sent to me from Dulcie. See, this group of individuals that I was friends with initially are absolutely adamant that any psychic, any paranormal, anything not having to do with the scientific aspect of ufology, you know, not be included in this type of work. When they found out that I was consulting a medium, a psychic medium, to analyze artifacts from Dulcie, that's when they went ballistic on me. That's when all this began. Prior to that, not a word out of them. Not a single word.
Okay,
so that's how all this got started.
So why is that an issue with them?
Oh, well, if you were to go to my website and you were to see an article written by... I don't want to mention names, but there's an article there where it's titled, you know, ufology, you know, the paranormal needs to remain out of ufology or something to that effect. These guys are, they're just, It's just like they're exclusionary. The paranormal invasion of serious UFO research. These guys call themselves serious UFO researchers. They consider themselves mainstream. Well, let me ask you something here. Since when on earth has UFO research or paranormal research ever been mainstream to begin with? So when I, brought this paranormal aspect into my research work for UFOs, that's when they went haywire. That's when they went ballistic and decided to turn on me. I'm no longer friends with these guys. They won't even talk to me. It is what it is. I moved on. I have new friends.
Yeah, well, look, UFOs themselves, I don't think are paranormal. In the sense that they are real. You can take pictures of them. If they would land, you could walk up and touch one. So in that sense, it's not paranormal. However, we have been told by people who worked on back engineering these things that, and including Colonel Corso, told us that the way the pilot pilots the thing is a link between his consciousness and the craft. That's paranormal.
The gun, this weapon that was found in Dulce utilizes a technology that's almost telepathic. You have to think in order to make this device operate. So, yeah, I agree with you on that wholeheartedly.
All right, we're only a minute. Yeah, we're only a minute from the next break, and I think we sort of have gotten the 747 through the hurricane here without hydraulics, by the way. believe me, folks, we are resorting to old-style manual stuff here to get both the radio and the TV broadcast out tonight. But when we come back from this upcoming break, I want you to talk with us about this gun that you just mentioned. Now, that's something that I think a lot of people are going at this moment. They're saying, gun? What is he talking about? I haven't heard about this. So...
Not only am I talking about a gun, Kevin, but I'm telling you there's a connection with this gun to an underground facility on the Cabazon Reservation where the Wackenhut Corporation facilitated the construction of a facility to mass produce these guns. There's a whole story behind that.
Okay, all right. We have to step away for the break. And ladies and gentlemen, we will return right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with Anthony Sanchez. Anthony, I phoned you during the break and told you something we were going to try. Scratch that. Forget it. We'll stick with what we've got because I don't think that fixed it. Okay, I want to talk about this gun, and tell us, okay, first, what is it, where was it found, and where is it now? Who's got it?
The gun is still in Dulce. As a matter of fact, there's lots of these guns in Dulce. Before I ended my interview with the colonel, he showed me four Polaroid photographs. These are black and white Polaroid fixed focus instant camera type, film. These were photos that he had taken using an incident camera before he finally left the facility. And the first photo was of a gray weapon. It is a gun that's
okay. What do you mean? What do you mean by gray weapon?
This is the weapon that the gray. This is the weapon of choice that the grays use.
Okay.
So it's almost like I don't know how to describe it. It is a strange organic looking weapon. It's not like anything a human would design or use. But there's no trigger mechanism on the weapon. You know, so you have to use like this, what's the word I'm looking for here, Kevin? Like the telekinesis? Is that would that be the right word? You know, your thoughts move, make the weapon fire. Would that be like telekinesis? What do you mean?
Well, I guess it could be, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. I mean, this weapon is operated on the power of thought. It has nothing to do with pulling the trigger. And the weapon is plasma-based. So that, you know, I detail that in the book. It has a power source, which essentially we know so far lasts to as long as up to 60 years without having to be recharged. It's just a strange-looking apparatus. You know, there's a super low blue lighting that indicates, you know, the level of charge for the status of the gun, of the weapon. So it's just, my point is this. My point is that we recently uncovered material that connects the construction of an underground facility in the Cabazon Reservation here in California directly to the existence of the facility in Dulce, New Mexico. How do we know this? We know this because the Wackenhut Corporation was instrumental in the design and construction of the underground facility in the Cabazon Reservation. They appointed a Michael Reconosciuto to be the director of operations during the construction phase of this facility. Why did they do that? They needed their own personal Oliver North. A fall guy, if you would. Michael Reconosciuto is in a federal prison. Prior to being imprisoned for the work that he did at the Insulog software company, which built the Promise case management system, which is what he got in prison for, he mentioned in an article in 1991 the existence of the Dulce facility by implicating Wackenhut and the work that he did for Wackenhut. So there's all these connections that we've uncovered. They're in the book, and we know that there's an underground facility in the Cabazon Reservation now. Now,
okay, let me ask you a question. You say he implicated Wackenhut at Dulce. Be more specific. What are you talking about? Wackenhut, of course, folks, is one of the largest private security firms in the world. It may be the largest. And what do you mean he implicated?
Michael Reconosciuto was not supposed to mention the fact that Wackenhut was involved in the construction of the facility in Cabazon. This was a real tight-lipped, project. It went all the way up to the executive administration. There were people that were murdered over trying to bring this project to light. Danny Casalero, a freelance journalist who wrote The Octopus, was found murdered. There was an attorney by the name of Iceman who tried to file a federal suit who was also found murdered in the same exact manner that Casalero was found. What happened was is that the Cabazon tribe was facilitating the construction of this underground facility, which was going to be producing and releasing highly toxic chemical output. And so because it would be on sovereign land under Indian reservation, much like with Dulce, they were going to be exempt from federal and state environmental laws. And that's what this was all about. They were going to build this sophisticated series of underground storage facilities for the toxic waste that was going to be produced during the construction of these conventional weapons, but which were plasma-based. They were plasma-based conventional weapons they were trying to replicate the device that is used at Dulce by the Greys.
How do you know that production of these plasma based weapons is what was going on? How do you know that?
Because I received documentation from a source who proved. Now you're getting me into a spot where I'm getting really nervous here, Kevin. But
well, good. That's what I get paid the big bucks for.
Well, Okay, well, this is why you get the big bucks. Remember, people were murdered over this. What I will say, I received a document from I received a document that had been written by Danny Casolaro, where he had received information that's what this was all about. Danny's now dead, and I don't want to end up dead, so I really don't want to go into too many of those details at the moment. But I know for certain, based on the document, which came from Casolaro, that there was gray technology being utilized and reverse engineered because they were not supposed to. Under this agreement that the Greys have with the military-industrial complex, certain aspects of their technology are not supposed to be reverse engineered, analyzed, modified, tampered with, period. And I really don't know if I should be talking about this particular aspect of this incident right now on the air. I don't think I should be. Sorry, right. I'm going to have to stop talking about that.
All right, so let's move from that to how does that connect to Delcy?
Michael Reconosciuto admitted in an article in 1991 in TC Magazine that he admitted the existence of the Delcy facility. But he was talking about the Cabazon Wackenhut facility. He admitted the existence of the Delcy facility in the article.
How did he do that? Give us your best memory of his words there.
I don't remember them exactly, but I have them. I actually have them written down here in a piece of paper.
Well, just your best. Just your best memory of what he said.
Yeah, it was essentially there was something to the effect that he was talking about the Cabazon Wackenhut facility, the construction of it, and he said, much like the work that is occurring at the Delcy facility in Delcy, New Mexico. That's what he said. I'm pretty sure it's almost like exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in that article in TC Magazine in 1991. TC as in Tom Charlie, technical consultant.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's what was said.
All right. Now, you've looked into the Delcy facility information, and you've actually been out there and investigated and been on the scene, and recently as well. Now, we have to step away for a break here in just a few seconds, and when we come back, I want you to take us to Delcy, and I want you to tell us first, so what? If there is a facility out there, so what? Why is that important? We'll be back, folks, right after this. More with Anthony Sanchez. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. If you're joining us just now in the second hour, you have missed a lot. A lot of information and maybe even a little bit of excitement there, a little bit of, I would say, interference, pretty severe. But anyway, we have worked around it, and we are speaking with Anthony Sanchez. He is the author of UFO Highway. Anthony, when we went away for break, I said, I want you to take us to Delcy, but first I want you to answer a very important question, and that question is, so what? Let's say there's a base there. So what? Who cares? No big deal. We now are getting quite a roar in your audio.
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
Well, now we can. So what's the deal? So what? Who cares?
Okay. Yeah. all right, really quickly, before I jump into the so what aspect of this, I just wanted to clarify that it was the November-December 1991 issue of TC Technical Consultant Magazine.
Yeah.
There was an article titled Waking Hut's Connection to the Black Project World, written by Thomas Zed. And there were some surprising entries about Waking Hut that presented a reverberating effect on the whole impact and reality of the underground facility in Dulce. And essentially what happened was Riconosciuto made reference to the Waking Hut Corporation, to their close connection to the whole world of Black Budget projects, but specifically for ongoing secret projects being undertaken in Dulce, New Mexico, where the Jicarilla Indian Reservation is. So that's where that information came from. So now with respect to the so what aspect, there's a human aspect to this. It's really serious that it is being overlooked. The people of the Jicarilla Reservation in Dulce, New Mexico, have the highest rates of cancers, a specific type of cancers that I detail in my book, that are just off the charts. And it's not fair to the people there that they're being subjected to these environmental atrocities that are coming about from the work on various, you know, conventional and non-conventional type weapons, you know, systems that are having an impact on the ecology, the local ecology, the environment, and the health of these people. So that's the so what. Also, you have to take into consideration that in the since the early 1990s, northern New Mexico has had the highest rates of this is per capita of for the population of missing women between the ages of 18 and 35, and young boys between the ages of 5 and 15. What we think is happening is that these people are being abducted through my lab's operations and utilized for purposes of genetics and breeding programs there at Dulce. That's the so what aspect of all of this.
Okay,
Dr. Michael Sala says that it's a human rights violations. There are potentially human rights violations being committed there in Dulce.
Well, certainly, if they are being abducted and held against their will, that is a human rights violation. It's also a violation of our Constitution, and it's a violation of every state laws in every state of the United States of America. If they are being used as breeders, or the experiments are being performed on them, that's a whole new set of violations that gets into very definitely into international law and various treaties and conventions and agreed upon conventions at the United Nations as well. So my point is, if that's what's going on, then who's doing it certainly could be theoretically held to trial in The Hague for crimes against humanity, if that's what's going on.
And there's one other thing that I'd like to mention, if I could interject here, Kevin. There's also another very, very non-secretive, non-mysterious, real-world, devastating impact that is occurring in Dulce. The level of cattle mutilations that happens in Dulce has literally devastated and ruined the lives of long-standing families whose history goes back generations there. One family in particular, I can't mention the name here, but they do speak openly about this, and there's a deep history of investigative journalism and law enforcement involvement, you know, as to, you know, with respect to the cattle mutilations. This one family was devastated. Their family business, which they've had for over 100 years, was ruined because they kept finding cattle surrounded by gas masks, covered in phosphorus materials. One of the investigators, before he passed away, New Mexico State Police Officer Gabe Valdez, who just passed away a couple of months ago, when he was alive, said, if you ever encountered any of these mutilated cattle, I can't disclose why, but I'm telling you, do not touch them. Do not ever handle them with bare hands. He was privy to some information that we no longer have. He has since passed away, and my thoughts go out to his family because he was a wonderful man, and we're really going to miss Gabe. But yeah, there's a real world aspect to this. Families' lives are being devastated. Their cattle businesses are going under.
Okay. How many times have you personally been out to Dulce?
I've been there 3 times. Twice last year and once this year, just a couple weeks ago.
This last trip, well, we'll get to the last trip. Let me ask you this. Before this last trip, did you find any evidence, artifacts, anything that said to you, yeah, this is real, I need to be back here, I need to be able to investigate this further and deeper?
Off the eastern slope of the Archuleta Mesa, between the eastern slope and the county road going up from Lumberton up to the southern Colorado border, I found a facility that looked extremely strange to me. And it appeared to have had some type of like a power generator that was military issue. However, the buildings, these houses, they were empty. There was no one in them. And there were tracks everywhere. There was like truck tracks, like some type of construction was happening there. And in my mind, I believe I found the security auxiliary that the colonel was talking about. Since that time, there has been another facility that Norio Hayakawa has found, along with the rancher from the family that I was just telling you about. It's called the Redding Ranch. There's this place called the Redding Ranch, and it is just a bit too strange for my liking. There's bulletproof towers. There seems to be a landing pad for some enormous type of craft. There's a lot of strange things going at the Redding Ranch up there at the Archuleta Mesa. And, again, that's an investigation that Norio Hayakawa was investigating. But I also found that facility off the eastern slope that was just a bit too strange for my liking. I didn't have a gun with me, but I swear, if I had shot at the windows of this facility, they would have been bulletproof just from the touch. There was nobody there when I went, but I took photographs of the this military-issued a power generator. It looked like a mini transformer of sort. It was just too strange. And there was nothing there, but there were truck tracks everywhere. So that was last year. This year I found something even stranger.
All right, let's get into that. You went back, and what happened?
So on Friday, the 21st of October, I had been asked to go to Dulce to work with Jesse Ventura, Governor Jesse Ventura, and his TV people there, I guess as a consultant or whatever, on Dulce. But I wasn't going to be able to make it there because I wasn't arriving until the following Monday, the 24th. At 2:30 in the morning, I pull into Dulce. I check in at the Wild Horse Casino. They have the Best Western Inn there. By 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the Tribal Council administrative offices. I'm meeting with the public relations officer, Leon Rival, and I also met with the Tribal Council president of the tribe, and we're being escorted by the chief of security for the administration, Miss Nancy Collado. She also facilitated the arrival of Governor Ventura. I don't know why, Kevin. I don't understand this, but Governor Ventura's television crew was denied filming access to the reservation. They were told they could film off reservation, and they were given a local Bigfoot expert to talk to. When I met with them, I gave them a copy of my book. To my surprise, the public relations officer had already been through my website, and he said he had read my book in PDF form. They gave us unprecedented access to the reservation. We were filming a documentary, as well as conducting our investigation. By 10:30 that morning, this is about 2.5 hours after I met with them, our guide had taken us up to the top of the mesa. We were on the plateau of the Archuleta Mesa. We had come across the 1996 UFO crash site. There's a famous crash site right there in Dulce where this 300-foot-wide columnar basalt, this wall of columnar basalt, was smashed into by a 150-foot diameter copper disc that was glowing. As these people swear that it was so bright that it would have melted if it were any brighter. there's a whole incident there, you know, with respect to families that drove up there, tried to see what had happened on the Mesa, and within minutes of the crash, black SUVs were on site, a perimeter was constructed, everybody was told to leave, homes were invaded, cameras, you know, video cameras that were taken, they're returned with no media in them. That was in 1996. These trucks took whatever crashed, you know, away from the Mesa, but the people said they saw a 150-foot diameter copper-colored disc, very bright, crash into the Mesa. We found that crash site. We took a bunch of photographs. It's very interesting, and we're posting that on our website, UFOHighway.com. But what we discovered was up on the plateau, tucked away in this really, really nondiscreet area, were two very large military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. Massive. We could not move them. There was three of us there. Altogether, the three of us could not make these things budge. Now, here's what's interesting. These things had the federal serial plating on them. We know where they came from. We just don't know how they got up there being so big. They had to have been dropped by a Chinook helicopter or something. There's just no way a conventional truck could have driven these things up there. Also, underneath one of them, there were wooden slats. And from the wooden slats, we detected air coming up from the bottom. Was it covering the shaft? I don't know. It was so heavy, we could not move them. A day later, after we made the discovery, I'm in my hotel room. I come down with a severe headache. I could barely stand. I was dizzy, my equilibrium was thrown off, and in tremendous amounts of pain. The following day, I'm suffering from full facial paralysis. On the left side, the entire left side of my face, from my shoulder all the way to the top of my head on the left side, completely paralyzed. And that's the reason why my voice sounds the way it does now. I'm still succumbing to levels of paralysis. Initially, they thought I had a stroke. Then they thought I had something called Bell's palsy. Ultimately, when I got back to California after a battery of blood tests, they told me that I was exposed to some type of a neurotoxin. They thought, okay, well, ant poison or wasp poison, something to that effect. If it had been some type of a commercial off-the-shelf pesticide, they would have been able to detect the chemical signature. Now, here's the problem. My doctors, who conducted the blood test, said that they can't identify the chemical signature. And one of them said that it's almost as if I've been exposed to some type of military-grade toxin. Now, you and I spoke, and we agree. If I had been exposed to something military, I'd be dead. But what was I exposed to, and why was this given to me? I don't know.
All right, let's talk about, you asked the question, why was this given to me? Let's talk about that. How do you think you came into contact with this? Do you think you came into contact with it while you were up on the Mesa, perhaps handling these big containers that you found up there? Or do you think it was something that was put into your food when you got back? What do you think happened?
Initially, I was touching the containers, and when I think back to Gabe Valdez's words where he says, don't touch the cattle, these containers were smack dab in the middle of a cow pasture underneath trees. One of them was concealed under a tree, and the other one was off by a water source. I touched them, and that's what I thought, okay, maybe I contracted something. But now that I'm thinking about it, you know, my team and I have analyzed this. When I checked into the hotel room that night, I believe that I was given something. I was given something there at the hotel is what we think now. I don't think it had to do with touching the containers at all. I think I was given something there at the restaurant at the hotel that evening. And let me explain to you why. Everybody in the restaurant was being served by a very, very attractive young woman, American Indian woman, there from the reservation. When my food and drink was brought to me, a woman, an olive-toned woman, she wasn't Spanish from the area, she wasn't American Indian from the area, we don't know what she was, and she was very good-looking, by the way, probably in her mid-40s, she served me. And then she disappeared. And everybody claims they remember seeing her, but when we asked the workers, when we asked the Collado family, when we asked the left-hand family, nobody knows who that person is, and they swear she does not work there. That's who we believe gave me something in my food, or my drink that evening. Because it was the next day that I began to succumb to even more pain and then the paralysis.
Well, Anthony, I'm sure it will not surprise you to learn that the CIA actually hired a magician. Pardon me, a magician at one point to come teach agents. And what this magician taught the agents specifically was how to drop a substance into someone's drink, how to put it into their food without being seen or detected, without ever anybody seeing it in their hands, the sleight of hand thing. So what you're describing is within certainly the training of the CIA. It's a matter of record that that was part of CIA training at one point, maybe still is. All right, so let's talk about why. Why you? No one else in your party got sick, right?
No, no one else got sick.
Why you, then?
Just me. Well, I was going to be presenting this evidence at this ASPE symposium, this paranormal symposium that Janet Saylor throws every year in New Mexico. I was a keynote speaker, and I announced, to my group that I was going to be presenting this evidence. Matter of fact, that day, while the headache was coming down, I was on the phone with Jerry, with another radio show host, and I announced to his audience, yes, I found something, and this is what's going to, what I'm going to present. Then it was at that meal, shortly thereafter, that this occurred to me. I think that's why. I think there was an attempt to prevent me from showing what I had uncovered.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you got to understand the significance of this find. What this proves is that there is, in fact, a United States government military presence on the Archuleta Mesa. Now, that is illegal in itself.
Why?
This is a violation of sovereign Jicarilla Apache land. They have a treaty with the United States. There are supposed to be, not since the Calvary, no military presence on their land without full disclosure to the nation. And when I talked to the law enforcement agency there, they said they don't know what the hell these things are and why they are there, let alone why there's air coming from underneath one of them.
Did you have any of the local law enforcement people with you?
The guy who took us up there is a 7-year law enforcement officer of the Jicarilla Apache Reservation. He just retired. He is now a professional hunting guide. His wife is the head of security for the tribal administration right now. She was a 13-year veteran police officer of the Jicarilla Apache Nation, and now she's been promoted to the head of tribal security, administration security, right there at the main facility. I have no reason to doubt these people. Their children were in front of them when we had these conversations. Why are they going to lie in front of their children? Why is anybody going to make up stories, about something that's obviously a violation of their land?
All right, let's go back to your meeting with the tribal elders. In this meeting, you no doubt told them what you wanted to do, what your goal was. They had read your book. There was no secret about any of this. So did any of them indicate to you that they knew of some kind of mysterious underground base up there in their area?
The one thing I can tell you about the Jicarilla people, one, they're beautiful people. I love their culture. They're some of the most wonderful people you will ever meet in your life. But two, this is a very, very highly reserved group that does not like to talk about anything, period. You have to one of the things that I do, now I'm friends with several families there. I cultivated this relationship, and they're just wonderful people. In fact, we stayed with them in Dulce on the reservation. One of the mistakes that many of the researchers do when they come to Dulce is they're very arrogant to begin with, and they talk at the people. They don't talk with the people, and they don't listen to the people. If they would just listen, they would hear what it is they need to understand the importance of the existence of a facility there. And that's what I do. I have heard countless, witness testimonies of craft, of black SUSVs, of men in military garb, but which they can't identify what branch of the military they're from. Let me tell you something. The guide that took us up there to the Mesa told us that this summer, he took two players from the Phoenix Suns basketball team up there on a hunting trip. Now, keep in mind, this is $2,000 a day. It's some of the most pristine hunting ground in the country. I mean, elk and deer are like rats up there. They're everywhere. So you're going to get something. That's why people pay the big bucks. Plus, it's gorgeous. But he took two players from the Phoenix Suns up there. Halfway up the Mesa, they were confronted by three men in military garb holding AR-15s, and they had sidearms, and they told them, you need to vacate the area. You're violating a restricted, you need to vacate the premises. You're violating a restricted area. When the guide told them that he was a veteran law enforcement officer and a Hickory Apache, that it was his right to be there, they told him that, no, today it's not your right to be here. You're violating a restricted area, and you need to leave immediately. When he got back into town, over the course of the week, there had been numerous similar types of incidents. So this summer, something was happening on the Mesa. It was military, and they could not identify what branch of the military. They saw helicopters. They saw black SUSVs. They saw trucks. Something was going on. So you see, if you just listen to the people and not talk at the people, you will learn what you need to hear.
All right, let's go back to the Mesa. Let's go back to these containers that you found. You had guides with you, right?
Yes, we had one guide with us, and my cameraman, Rick Prestel of Sacramento MUFON, who was manning the high-definition camera and also taking still photos.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back from this break, we shall continue, ladies and gentlemen. So, don't go away.
And I'm listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're speaking this evening with Anthony Sanchez. For those of you who may not, this may be new to you, and you're not familiar with Anthony Sanchez, let me tell you, he's got more than 20 years as a computer software engineer, UFO researcher, writer, and now... through no choice of his own, highly controversial, and suffering from the effects of having been up on the Archuleta Mesa in New Mexico. As we went away for break, I had asked, if you had a guide with you, and yes, you did. Here's what I want to ask about. What was the guide's response when you first saw these containers? Did the guide feel like, this is no big news, we've seen them before, or is this all new to the guide?
Well, let me tell you, this is the strangest aspect to this part of the story. I found the containers. When we got up there, I spotted the containers. He was driving right past them as if nothing was there. and I saw them out of my peripheral vision. I had them back the truck up, pull up to them, and that's when things got weird, because this guy, he's a friend of mine. Keep in mind, he's a friend of mine. But he looked me dead in the eye, and he warned me, and he said, do not film me. I don't want my face on these films. I don't want my name being heard on these films. Do not film me. Warn me. Now, I just, that was a strange reaction. I was like, whoa, what the heck is this? You know, the discovery of these containers elicited a strange emotional, a heightened emotional response from the guy. And I just thought that was strange. Also,
okay, so this guy, he's a friend of yours. But he says,
yes.
And he's a guide up there, and he says, ignore me. I don't want my name used. I don't want it mentioned. I don't want my face on your film. Why?
He's up there all the time. He had never noticed these containers before. He says they were not there before. What was strange about that is when we looked at the containers, they had some level of aging on them. I mean, even around the federal serial plating, you saw a little bit of rust. But he swears that he's never seen them before. It's almost as if somebody flew them up there and placed them up there as to conceal something. And keep in mind that one of them had wooden slats underneath it, and there was air coming up from the ground. Adjacent to the containers was something even stranger.
Oh, okay.
I have photos of this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a shack. It looked like it could be a hunting lodge of sort. When I asked my guide, he says, nobody from the Hickory Nation placed that there. We don't know where it came from. It's been there, he said, I think for maybe a year, a year and a half at most. They don't know who put it up there. They don't know why it's there. It looks dilapidated. When the nation erects a hunting lodge, it is pristine, using brand new cedar wood, gorgeous designs. This thing looks like it was purposely designed to be an abandoned shack, you know, an unwanted shack, and it just happens to be within 200 yards away from where the containers exist. I think it's some sort of guard shack.
Okay,
I have
so
photos
when,
of it. I'll
when
send
you
the
were
photos
up there,
after this.
Okay, when you were up there, you saw this guard shack, or what you think is a guard shack. Did you see any personnel manning the guard shack, or in the absence of personnel, did you see any devices that could be monitoring what you said, or perhaps videoing you?
No, we were videoing the shack, and we took pictures of the shack. It was abandoned. There was nothing. There was no one there. Now, we didn't go inside the shack. Keep in mind, we're at 9,500 feet elevation, and I'm a big boy. I'm 6'3", and I'm over 300 pounds. And Rick, to his credit, you know, he's smaller than me, but he could barely breathe when we got up there. So our Hickory guy, he was doing just fine. But it was 200 miles away. It was even at a higher elevation. We couldn't get to it. There was just no way we could get to it. There was nobody there, Kevin. There was nobody in that shack. I have photos, which I'll send to you, of the shack. And there was nobody there. But it's strange that it was adjacent to the discovery of the U.S. military-grade shipping containers. These are massive steel containers used for F-5 jet engines.
How were you able to determine that they're used for F-5s?
Oh, yeah, we identified that from the federal serial plating. It literally says it on there.
Okay, so here's a crate that was originally used to haul a jet engine. You gotta wonder, where's the jets?
Exactly.
I mean, you're you're basically in a semi-desert on top of this mesa. There's no airport. There's no runway. We can see. We're looking at pictures that you have on your website, and we can see. This is excessively rural and rugged here. And you got to wonder how it got up there. And I'm wondering also, why is it up under this tree?
Yeah, I don't know that. We don't know the answer to that. If you look at the website, the second photo, which is up at the top, that's the one that had air coming from underneath it. The one under the tree, we couldn't budge it. We could not move it. We just could not move it, and we didn't see any wooden slats under that one the way the other one had. But I'm wondering if whoever was up there and conducting these operations said to somebody over at Kirtland Air Force Base, I need two massive pieces of steel to cover up these shafts. Get me whatever you can get. And maybe they helicoptered these in because they're so massive. Trying to move them was just impossible. That maybe they were helicoptered up there to just cover up these shafts. Because the one definitely has air coming from underneath it.
Did you get out and try to see up under it?
Oh, I tried to stick my hand under it, but it was impossible. These things are just way too damn heavy. There's no way they could drop these up there with a truck. It's just, the guide confirmed to me, bringing these things up with the truck would have just been impossible. Because you have to understand the nature of the roads on the rural J2 going up there to the top of the mesa. It is very, very treacherous. You are talking about the truck at times, being put in a compromising position, like a 30-degree, angle. It's crazy. It's crazy trying to get up some of these roads. There's no way they would have been able to bring these things up there. Had to have been flown in.
Okay. Do you know of any stories of any of the Jicarilla people that remember helicopters coming in the nighttime to this area?
I just received photographs the other day from a friend of mine who lives there on the reservation of a black Chinook helicopters, 11 helicopters in formation. I just received these photos. I'll be posting them on my website. They are there all the time. Now, for the closest military installation is Kirtland Air Force Base, which is just some 250, 300 miles away. Listen, Kevin, I created a map of Dulce, New Mexico, pinpointed in the middle, surrounded by every known military installation, U.S. Naval, Air installations, Air Force. I even found a couple of Marine and Army training bases. You name it, I found it. I put it on the map. Dulce is smack dab in the middle of all of these. It is my new opinion that Dulce just happens to be in the middle of, this air traffic for experimental aircraft. Maybe even, that utilize reverse engineering, alien technology. They're just seeing, too many things. This year alone, since the summer of this year, there have been numerous sightings of this gigantic copper-colored craft that I told you about from 1996. They've seen it again over Dulce Rock, coming from Lumberton, headed back towards Lumberton. The guide, three separate families, over 22 people I interviewed from three separate families, have seen 9 silver-colored discs in formation flying over Dulce Rock, over the Archuleta Mesa. There's just a lot of UFO activity in Dulce. And I just received these images of these helicopters flying over Dulce as well. Why is there a military presence there? UFO, who knows why there's UFOs everywhere. But a military, all these military trucks and these military, helicopters, something's going on.
Okay, let's talk about the something that's going on. I'm sure, because of your research, you are familiar with the name Phil Schneider. Phil Schneider went public and told a story about being involved in the construction of Dulce. And he told about a battle that took place between, I think it was Delta forces, Delta Force troops, and some extraterrestrials in that underground base that he said exists at Dulce. Well, you know, Schneider got kind of the same treatment that you've gotten. And that is, on one side, there were people that were eating it up and saying, man, that's fantastic. We're so glad that he's come out with this story and told us the truth about what's going on. On the other side were people saying this guy's nuts. And so, you know, it was pretty interesting times there. And he told about this battle. And, in fact, he told, I believe, if I remember his story correctly, it's been a long time since I've heard it, but I think that he was actually shot by one of their weapons. He was injured. And if I'm not mistaken, he killed one or two of the Greys. All right. Even if I got some of the details of that story wrong, because I'm an old guy and I forget stuff. Even if I got some of the details wrong, that's basically the story. Okay. You've done a lot of research on Dulce. What say you of the Phil Schneider story?
Okay, so based on what I know of the 1979 event, number one, Phil Schneider was there. Number two, when Phil Schneider talks about this FBI agent who saved his life, guess what? That was the colonel. The colonel posed as an FBI agent when he met with Phil Schneider, because had he told Phil Schneider that he had worked for DSD-3, Phil Schneider would not have even given him the time of day. Why? Because Phil Schneider was on the run from DSD-3, which is the intelligence body there operating at Dulce. When he started to hit the lecture circuit and he started to show off these these geological samples, from the Greys, which have to do with the stealth technology, that's when he put himself in danger. He was there. He augmented parts of his story. The colonel confirmed to me that he felt, that Schneider felt, that by changing aspects to the story, that he was going to save himself.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up with the Phil Schneider story right after this break. Don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We do have more. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and that means, of course, that it doesn't mean feedback. I don't know where that came from, but that means, of course, that we are not going to be able to get all of this story. I mean, this is huge. Anthony, you were telling us about Phil Schneider, and the colonel told you, the colonel being your source primarily, told you that Phil Schneider was augmenting or giving a slightly not accurate version of what was going on, and he was doing that thinking that was going to protect him.
And it didn't. It didn't protect him. Obviously, we know the outcome of that. The story at the time had not been known. It was just too powerful of a story. It was just too powerful of information to be circulated amongst the public at that time. So when he began his lecture circuit, that's what got him in trouble. The fact that he was mentioning things like his rhyolite clearance and whatnot. Listen, you have to keep this in mind with Phil Schneider. When Phil Schneider's body was found, there was a large amount of cash, there was a family watch, there was a loaded pistol. There were items you'd think an intruder would have taken. The only things that were missing from his person were the geological samples from Dulcy, his lecture papers, and the photographs that had been given to him and that he had accumulated over the years from people like his father, who also had involvement with the government. So it's not surprising that he was taken out.
All right. Now, what are you doing differently to protect yourself? What are you doing differently? I mean, you're sort of taking the Phil Schneider story to the next level.
Well, the difference between me and Phil Schneider is I'm not claiming to have ever worked at Dulcy. I've never worked at Dulcy. Let's get that clear. The colonel claims to have worked at Dulcy. The colonel has provided me with a wealth of information, a wealth of data, that I'm finding through some of my cross-correlations in my research are proving to be factually accurate, especially when I begin to talk with the people at Dulcy who admit to me, now these are residents of Dulcy who have admitted to me that there is a facility on their reservation. I spoke with a current chief of police from a neighboring reservation. He actually is half Jicarilla and half something else. I can't tell you what the something else is because then you would know where he's from. He wants to remain anonymous. I had with me the organizer of the ASPE symposium, Janet Saylor, at the table, including Rick Prestel and MUFON, when this gentleman, in front of his two sons, admitted to me that he had seen a holographic entrance on the southwest portion of the mesa several times with his partner, a fellow police officer of the Jicarilla Reservation. They told us of this intriguing story of this craft that they encountered. He drew for me on a piece of paper this craft, and when I saw the drawing, I was shocked to my core, because the only other craft that I had ever seen drawn like this was done by Phil Benowitz. And this is not a widely known drawing. Not that many people have ever seen this drawing.
You mean Paul Benowitz?
Yeah, Paul Benowitz. Excuse me. Yeah, Phil Schneider, Paul Benowitz. Got him confused. Paul
that's
Benowitz.
Because
that's
you're getting,
right.
That's because you're getting old.
I turned 41 this year. Give me a moment. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah. So, Paul Benowitz. Now, I just recently came in possession of a large amount of papers, memoirs, documents, handwritten from Paul Benowitz through an estate sale. A friend who wants to remain anonymous at this point, but he's pretty high profile in this field himself, acquired these, and he sent me copies of everything. One of these has a drawing of a teardrop-shaped craft. It is the strangest thing I've ever seen. It has a cockpit in the front. The chief of police of this neighboring reservation, who for over 10 years was a Jicarilla police officer, drew a nearly identical representation of this craft. And it just really resonated with me, Kevin, because he knows nothing about Paul Benowitz. Absolutely nothing about Paul Benowitz. And this is a gentleman who confirmed that there is a holographic entrance. There's several of them. One of them is several hundred feet beneath the radio towers there on the mesa, and the other one is on the southwest portion of the mesa. That is the third, but he didn't tell me where that one was. But he saw a being inside a craft that hovered directly above him and his partner. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming out of Dulcy. Now, let me tell you something about this guy. His two sons, his young sons, were at the table. I don't think any father is going to sit there and concoct these wild stories in front of their sons or daughters. You know, I have two sons. I would never do anything like that. Number one, I don't lie. But number two, I would never misrepresent myself, you know, in such a fashion. This guy was telling the truth. And I have witnesses right there.
Now, when you say holographic entrances, what are we talking about? What do you mean holographic entrances?
He says that there's actual physical doors that replicate the columnar basalt. He says they have striations there. You couldn't tell. You know, they're there. There's an area called Shadow Ridge, which I believe is one of these, which I pinpointed and I've actually photographed. Now, He says when these columnar basalt doors, these straight doors, open up, they continue to be concealed by holograms. These are holographic projections. They're bending and twisting light and, you know, utilizing, you know, holographic technology to continue to conceal the doors even as they're open.
So then how would he know that, how would he know they were open?
He also says that same technology is being used at Mount Archuleta, where there's another facility.
Okay, now if it's there's a holographic projection continuing to hide the entrance, how would he know when the doors are open?
Because they see the craft going in and out. They've seen craft going in and out of these hangars.
So it appears they're just flying into the wall of the mesa.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is a police chief.
That's right. He is the chief of police of a neighboring reservation. He's a 10-year veteran of the Jicarilla. And that's about all I can say on him, though, at the moment.
All right. Well, look, we've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for being with us and for being willing to answer what has to be pretty tough questions about what happened and that brought down the wrath of some of these other hosts. And you know, you've been I think very candid with us, and I appreciate that. Website for Anthony is UFOhighway.com. I think I got that right. Is that correct, Anthony?
Yes, sir. Yes, you did.
Okay. Stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Anthony Sanchez. It's a fascinating, amazing, astounding story. There's a lot more to this story than we could possibly get to in this one show. But I appreciate Anthony for coming and sharing with us again. We will have him back with us. And I encourage you to get over to UFO Highway and check out the book. Check out the information. There are pictures there. There's additional information there. So check it out. And make up your own mind. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again. Until next time, so long, everyone.